Hello, everyone, and welcome to minute 88 of season 5 of Movie on Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1990 Bruce Willis action flick Die Hard 2, Die Harder, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is David Brook of Blueprint Review. Welcome back, David.
Good to be back. Start talking about more snowbound action.
Yeah. Hey, go see off the street. So minute 88 begins with Blue Light getting closer to the church and ends with McLean fessing up. So yesterday we had I wouldn't say it's a silent minute, but a nonverbal minute where there was just a lot of grunting and fighting and fake fighting and fake wrestling and whatever it is with John and Baker. And John ends up killing Baker with an icicle and breaking it off in his eye. So then we finish things with the truck with Blue Light showing up, and a few of the men start to get out. And that's how this minute picks up, where we have another few guys get out, and we see them stealthily running towards the church. And then it's great. We see a shot of Grant behind them. You know, following them, he's just like walking with Lorenzo and another soldier, right? And, you know, none of them have ski masks on. And you'd think that, you know, if you're trying to blend in, there's more of a reason for Grant to be wearing a ski mask than anyone else. You know, he's going to stand out a little more than everyone else. Again, we discussed yesterday the pointlessness of having the ski mask, but whatever. I think it has more to do with the fact that they want us to recognize who's who. And if Grant had a ski mask, then we wouldn't know who Grant was. So I think that's the idea here that, you know, and, you know, he's the commander who's just walking in the background, not doing anything dangerous, I guess you can say, with the way that he's doing it.
And I guess he put ski masks on the kind of drones because they're going to be stuntmen in a minute.
That's right. That's true. Yeah, but actually, later in the movie, they become more stuntmen than maybe next week. We will see the stunt work that they do. This week, we don't see much stunt work except for them just moving a little bit here and there. You know, nothing really. I don't know. It's just,
I must admit, at the beginning of this minute, we did have a little mini stunt from Bruce Willis is sliding in the snow. I'd say, to be fair, that would actually hurt a little bit.
That was yesterday. Today we start with them getting out of the truck. There's no... you're saying a little bit later.
Oh, am I in the wrong one? No, I'm looking at the beginning of this. He slides in the snow. Am I getting mixed up?
No. When you're saying beginning, you mean like 10 seconds in. Okay. All right, fine.
Sorry. You're further on than I am. Sorry.
That's 10 seconds on, not the very, very beginning of the minute, you know, that type of thing. But yeah.
Yeah, I'm jumping ahead.
That's right. You know, and the soldier who's walking behind Grant, he's like holding his gun in a very strange way. You would not be holding your gun that way if you're about to do, you're getting closer to an assault. You know, he's holding his gun up. Which, you know, if you're getting closer, you're not going to be doing something like that. And they walk past something that looks really strange. It looks like a shed or something like that. Were you able to tell what that is behind them?
Yeah, it just looks like a shack. I don't know. House or something. There's loads of doors on there. Yeah, it's weird.
Yeah,
it's a weird woodshed or something. But there's no wood in it.
That's right. It's just very, very weird. Yeah, not really sure. And, you know, then we see the soldiers getting closer to the church. And once again, the music swells, you know, telling us that things are getting more tense, stuff like that. And then we get a shot of John, who's, you know, catching his breath and standing up. And he like pushes on Baker to like heave himself up, which is very funny the way that he's doing that, you know. Or maybe he's trying to pat him down or something like that. I'm not really sure. You know, it's like he did that in the last movie.
To push up by that, yeah.
In the last movie, he would go through their pockets. You know, he killed a few people and went through their pockets to see what they got. Here he doesn't do that. Here he just gets up. You know, and now he's obviously not patting him down. He's just using it to steady himself. You know, showing how unsteady John is while he's doing that. And then he starts running and then stumbles. And then, as you mentioned, he slips, which is just really funny, especially knowing that this is all fake snow.
Yeah.
You know, meaning there's no way that was really slippery. But and
well, I guess they could have made it slippery. There might be something.
Right. That's true. But you also have the body of Baker just lying there still. He doesn't even try and conceal it. It's like, all right, he's dead. That's it. We're moving on. And then we hear in the background a whistle. And then we hear Barnes say, "Over here." You know, which it's just funny that John Barnes then tries to climb over the fence.
I'd say Barnes doesn't look very protected. He's just kind of right out there, isn't he, at the minute? I just thought he'd be a bit more scared, like hide behind that tree or something.
Well, especially since he knows that all these guys are coming.
Yeah, yeah. But instead, he's like, massive whistle, stood right in the open. He's not even behind those little barrels.
That's right.
Whatever those are doing there.
And John, like, falls over the fence as he's trying to climb over it and stuff like that, and then walks over, and we see, in the distance, we see Lorenzo and Grant and a few of the soldiers walking towards where John is. And then he gets up to where Grant is, and Grant goes, "Geez, McLean, you all right? You want a medic?" And then Lorenzo says, "McLean, what the hell you think you're doing out here? Playing John Wayne? How would you like to spend the night in a cell?" Now, my first question is okay, I understand that Lorenzo's a little upset, but what law has John broken here?
He did just kill somebody.
That's true, but still. You know, I don't know. He doesn't say for killing somebody.
It just seemed to have it in for him for no reason whatsoever.
That's right. Like, what did John do? I mean, think about it. John, without John, they wouldn't know to be in this place. Without John, they wouldn't be dealing with half the terrorists than they would normally. I mean, it's like all these. Same thing was in the original Die Hard also, and you even had a moment in the first movie. They were defending him. You know, by saying, you know, he's the reason. He's the reason you're dealing with, was it 7 terrorists instead of 13 or whatever it is that Al says to him. I don't remember the exact quote, but he's basically saying he's the reason you're dealing with less people, and it's more or less the same idea here. And Lorenzo doesn't really care about that. And then Grant turns to Lorenzo and says, "Lorenzo, shut the fuck up and do something useful. Go steal off the street." He goes, "Hey, you can't talk to me like that." Now, my question is why not? You know, and it goes back to what we were talking a little bit about yesterday, that I think that one of the reasons Grant is doing this is because it's part of his plan. Mm. You know, if Lorenzo is not nearby, then things are a little easier for him to get around doing things. And this just gave him the perfect opportunity to push him away.
Yeah, and plus Lorenzo might have real rounds. He doesn't want him shooting his mates.
That's true. Also, it's a good point.
I think that's the main reason. That's what I got from that. Really, is he?
Yeah, I did. Wow, you're right. I didn't even think about that. But he doesn't say get your men out of here. Also, he just says that you get out of here.
Does he have any other men? Did the police come with him, or is it just?
Well, we saw 5 police cars show up.
Oh yeah, of course.
I'm assuming that Lorenzo is not driving all 5.
Yeah.
My assumption. I mean, it's possible that he has some sort of futuristic mechanism that will allow him to control 5 cars at the same time. I don't know.
Or all of, All Grant's men use the police cars for no apparent reason because they've lost theirs around.
That's true, also.
Yeah.
That's true.
I'm sure they're in the trucks, though.
Yeah. I mean, I like the way that
Oh, no, they're clearly in the trucks. You see them in the trucks, and I'm talking rubbish.
Well, we saw most of them in the trucks. We don't know how many there are.
Yeah.
We saw 12 show up, but there could have been more that showed up that we didn't see or anything like that. We never get an actual account of how many of Grant's men there are, because they all live up until they get into the transport. You know, there's not a single one of them that doesn't make it into the transport. Mm. So, yeah, I don't know. And then Grant says to him, "Oh no, Carmine, Sergeant, get this bureaucrat out of Mr. McClane's face now." And I've always loved this response by this unnamed soldier who's just known as Sergeant. Okay, it's actually an actor whose name is Ben Lemon. And, you know, he goes, "With pleasure, sir." You know, it's a very musical way for him to say this, the way that he says it.
Relishing his single line, I guess.
That's true also. But what I found great is I decided to do a little bit of to see who this guy Ben Lemon is. Okay. So he was born on the 21st of May, 1955. So that means he was around 35 when this movie was made. He has 34 IMDb credits as an actor. But then he has additional crew, 7 different credits. And I was just shocked at what it says here. His credit is the assistant manager, disc, space, and retakes. There are 7 movies where he gets that credit. Okay. The Emperor's New Groove, Atlantis, The Lost Empire, Lilo and Stitch, Treasure Planet, Brother Bear, Home on the Range, and The Little Match Girl. Okay, so I decided to try and do a little bit of a search to see what is this type of job. You know, what is an assistant manager, disc, space, and retakes? I mean, did you notice one thing that's in common of all the 7 movies?
Well, they're all animated.
That is correct. They're all animated movies.
I've got a guess of what he does, but I'll let you go.
Okay, so the only other person that I was able to find a credit for like this, which, again, I'm sure there might be others, but the only one that I found by doing a search on IMDb is a woman named Brenda McGurl. Okay, that's her name. And that's right. And she has even less than he does with the number of credits, you know, as the assistant manager for disc, space, and retakes. So... I'm a little confused. My assumption is that, especially at the time, you know, they needed to make sure that they would always have enough space to record, you know, to keep things on their computers. Obviously, today, you know, the capacity of computers is much larger than it was back then. Okay. She has 10 credits with that thing. Also, all of them Disney movies. Okay, The Hunchback of Notre Dame, Hercules, Mulan, Tarzan, The Emperor's New Groove, Atlantis, Lilo and Stitch, Treasure Planet, Brother Bear, and Home on the Range. So she coincides with him. So they have to have actually 2 people who have to do that. Ah, sorry. He's the assistant manager. She's the manager. That's the difference. So yes, what would be your guess as to what this is really?
Well, that's kind of I've worked on shoots before where we, that's when you work with digital footage, it's somebody who gets all the files off the cards and backs them up straight away on set kind of thing. So I kind of feel it's like that. It's just someone who's in charge of. Especially with those Disney movies, they'll need a huge amount of space. So it's somebody who's kind of in charge of what they're stored, really. But it's the retakes thing that confuses me. That's why it's odd. Disc, space, and retakes.
Maybe the idea is that when they redo a scene or something like that, then they need to then make sure it's all filed away properly so that they can easily access
deleted,
them.
Yeah. Maybe. Yeah. It's not one, but yeah, you do need people in charge of the files. It's very important,
right.
Especially with digital films.
Right.
And I guess this is those films are some of the earlier CGI assisted kind of animated stuff. I mean, it's not all CGI movies, but they will have computer. It's when they started to use computers still for the 2D stuff.
Right.
So yeah, I guess it was and in those early days it will have taken, well, I mean these days it takes even more space, but we can get, I don't know, 20 terabytes and just a little drive now these days, but not then.
Right. Yeah, no, the whole thing is just very strange. I mean, what's strange is that I was only able to find two people in all of IMDb that do this. And, you know, this is a guy who, he might be a background actor, but he still has 35 acting credits. 34, sorry. Mm. She doesn't have any acting credits. Yeah. You know, besides being in this movie, he was also in Liar Liar. He was in Hot Shots Part 2. Mm. So, you know, again, he was in
stuff as well.
Yeah, he was in a lot of movies that you know, he was in a lot of high profile movies in low profile roles, I guess you can say.
Mm. Yeah, although he's named in Liar Liar though, Randy. And in fact, I seem to remember it. Yeah, the name sounds really familiar from that as well. I think it's one of these people that Jim Carrey kind of says Randy, and I can't remember what he says, but some kind of insult, I guess.
Yeah, I don't remember. The movie that movie that well.
Remake.
Definitely. Yeah, but yeah, I found that very interesting. So he was born in a place called Tarrytown, which is actually it's part of Westchester County in New York, and it's on the east bank of the Hudson River, approximately 25 miles north of Midtown Manhattan. And then I started looking it up, and there's a lot of interesting things that happened in this particular place. Okay. During the Revolutionary War, the Major John Andre was arrested as a spy in Tarrytown, which he then exposed the plans of his associate Benedict Arnold. You know, so that was a very large thing. The Washington Irving, when he was talking about when he wrote his book about the legend of Sleepy Hollow. All right. It actually takes place in Tarrytown, the beginning of it. It's explained, you know, that the Underground Railroad ran through Tarrytown, you know, before and during the Civil War. And for instance, John D. Rockefeller lived there. Actually, because there were some very affluent people that were living there, there were numerous bombing attempts with dynamite and stuff like that in the early 1900s, where people were trying to, you know, to, I guess, assassinate people there, stuff like that. So yeah, no, it's interesting the way it is the number two in a list of top 10 places to live in New York. It is ranked second. So. Hmm. I guess that says something about it. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, as there's only about like 1,200 people that live there. It's a pretty small, village. But yeah, you know,
with a lot of stuff going on.
But Ben Lemon was born there. In order for him to be able to say, "My pleasure," with pleasure. Right. So also Washington Irving lived there. There is a comedian that I know of from the 80s known as called Kevin Meaney, who lived there. He passed away a few years ago. Cab Calloway lived there, you know, the jazz singer and band leader.
Cool.
Who else is there that J.D. Salinger lived there.
Oh, wow.
You know, the writer of Catcher in the Rye.
Yeah. All
right, I remember I saw that. Mark Twain lived there for a little while also, and Vanessa Williams also lived there.
Wow.
And in the movie On the Waterfront, Tarrytown is mentioned by one of the characters that they are studying in a school to be a teacher in Tarrytown. Hmm. So, yeah. And cool. There's a whole bunch of other references here and there, but those are the big ones that I found. So yeah, he says with pleasure, sir, and then basically motions to Lorenzo that he'll escort him away. And And then one of the other soldiers comes up to him and goes, "Major, the men are in position, sir." And then he goes, "Close up the back. Then we go in. Fire only on my order." "Roger that, sir." And then John turns to him and says, "Guess I was..." And then he gets cut off. People have to wait until tomorrow to find out what John actually says there. But think about it again. Do you think this is all part of Grant's plan by saying, "Okay, close up the back, then we go in," meaning we're going to wait. We're not going in so quickly. Let's take our time, you know, that type of thing.
Yeah, need to give them time to put their little bombs on and all this kind of stuff. The stuff we'll see next episode, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I just find it interesting the way that it seems as if he's trying to stall here a little bit. You know, it's a problem when you're watching a movie like this and you know that the character has ulterior motives. You know, like when you're watching it the first time, you won't.
Watching them again, yeah.
That's right. When you watch it the first time, you don't notice it right away. Or at least at this point, you don't notice it. A little later on, once you figure it out, there's something else. But I don't know. Don't really know. Okay, that's all I have for this minute. Do you have anything else for this minute?
I think just a overall comment for that minute is that it's you get because there's more dialogue in this one. You get another kind of one of my pleasures in the film is the dialogue and the kind of the banter between the characters. A lot of kind of I don't know if hard boiled the right way, but a lot of swearies kind of having to go at each other, kind of banter in there. That's a lot of part of the fun of the Die Hard movies, and so it's good to have a minute with a bit of that in there.
Okay, that makes sense. I mean, we've had that numerous times already, but yeah, you're right. It's a nice way for them to.
Well, I think there's more clear. It's more here than probably in that first minute. I think.
Yeah.
Stronger anyway.
For sure. For sure. Okay, so the script. The script has it's pretty much the same. There's a few little discrepancies here and there. The conversation between Lorenzo Grant and John is pretty much the same. You know, where he talks about him, you know, "You're playing John Wayne. Do you want to spend the rest of the night in the cell?" And then he screams at him and says, steal off the street. And he says, "You can't talk to me that way." And then he goes, "Oh, no, Carmine? Sergeant, get this bureaucrat out of Mr. McLean's face." You know, the same way that he says in the movie. And then we have the "with pleasure, sir." And it says, and Lorenzo is hustled away. McLean takes out a cigarette and he lights up the cigarette and he goes, "I was wrong." And then this happens a little bit later in the script, just a few paragraphs afterwards, you know, which basically will be tomorrow, but it's the dialogue from today where one of the men comes up to Grant and goes, "Flanking the church now, sir. Close up the back. Then we go in. Fire only on my order." So they just switch around a little bit of the timing of the different things. So yeah, it's pretty much the same for this minute. So every Wednesday, yeah, I have a segment called Off the Beaten Track Aviation Edition, where my guests will give some sort of story, anecdote, adventure, misadventure, something that has happened to them, possibly on the way to Cannes, Dave, that is related to either the airport or flying or an airplane or flying to space or something like that. So, David, you have another story for us to try and top some of the old stories you told us.
Yeah, well, I think it's a new one. I can't remember. In my head, I feel like I've said this before on a podcast, but it might be a different one. I can't remember, but I'll go for it anyway.
If it's about missing a flight, is it about missing a flight to...
It's not missing a flight to Cannes. No, it's not Cannes related. No. This time, yeah, basically, we went with a few years ago. We went with my two girls to America to go to Disney World and to also meet some of my family there, who hadn't met my youngest yet. She hadn't been over to the States yet. So we boarded the flight. I was on time this time. We got on the plane. So this is a good flight.
Well, that's because your wife was in charge.
Yeah. But yeah, so we get onto this plane, and obviously I'm from the UK, and the flight over to, I think it's direct to Florida is, 6-7 hours or something like that. It's quite a long flight, But anyway, we get on the flight. We kind of set off, and this is and quite early on the flight. I think maybe only it wasn't long at all. Maybe 20 minutes, half an hour at max. So really early on the flight, they start serving the drinks. So I was like, okay, cool. I'll get a glass of water and what have you. But then my I was sat in the in front next to kind of a random guy. And then and my wife and girls were behind me because there were only three seats, we couldn't all sit together. So I was in front of them. I was sat to this next to this random guy. But my girls, I can't remember, my girls were kicking up a fuss or doing something. So I got up to see what was going on and to kind of help my wife out. And I knocked my full glass of water all over the crotch of the man sat next to me. And this is the beginning of like I had another 6.5 hours to sit next to this stranger. And I just poured a big full glass of water all over his crotch. It was the most embarrassing thing.
For you or for him?
I just didn't even know what to do. I was both, I guess. It was just like, oh, he was probably already a bit like, oh, I'm sat next to this young family. And then I just poured water all over him. So yeah, that was very, very, very uncomfortable trip after that. Yeah.
did he say anything to you? Was he telling you to go steal off the street?
He didn't say a lot. He obviously looked pissed off, but he didn't say much about it. I think I was very, very apologetic, obviously. I don't know, I gave him lots of tissues, but I was not popular for that flight.
Oh well. What can you do? And your wife didn't offer to switch seats with you at that point so that you don't have to sit next to him?
No, I was okay.
Yeah. All right, great. So you want to once again tell people how they can find David Brook?
Yeah, so I write reviews over at blueprintreview.co.uk. Go check it out. And I'm on Facebook and Twitter. Look for Blueprint Review and you'll find me there.
All right. And while you're doing that, you can go rate, review, and subscribe or any podcast you might be using to listen to the show. Finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for A Movie Around Minute. You can find me on my website, moviearoundminute.com. You can find me on Facebook. And you can find me on Twitter. So until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay.
If you're fond of sand dunes and salty air, quaint little villages here and